What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I am Pete.
And we are going to talk about a buttload of new comic books.
Because that's the best place to keep them.
Yeah, that's where do you store your comics?
Right in my butt. That's that's how you professionally grade them. Because mine are mint.
Some people actually call that the comic pocket.
That's true.
Yes, doctors mostly.
Yeah, doctors are like, oh, you have a horrible infection in your comic
don't
pocket.
Don't we have a stack to talk about?
We have a ridiculously huge stack, and we're going to kick it off with Archie 1941 number one from Archie Comics. Now, for those of you who haven't quite been paying attention, Mark Waid has recently done a big reinvention of Archie. It's kind of halfway between Riverdale on TV and the classic Archie comics.
Well, it started to be the classic Archie, and then it's sort of, as Riverdale got more popular, I feel like it sort of arced toward Riverdale.
Sure, it got more messed up.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
A couple more murders, possibly.
Just like life and high school.
And yeah, that's absolutely
true. You
start
high school mint, and then by the end, you're not mint.
Yeah, and then when you're done with high school, you head to war, is what happens. Now, this is, as the title implies, taking us back to 1941, taking the Archie characters, putting them in America on the cusp of war. And this issue is dealing with an Archie that just graduated and following. What does he do next? What's going to happen to him? What is his goal?
We've all been there.
We absolutely.
Now, except for Pete, who never finished high school.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, I think it's one of those things where it's like, you know, when you don't know what you're doing with your life, you water your lawn in the same spot for a half an hour. And that's just, you know, part of the process.
Now, I think you guys can probably pick up on this, but Justin likes the Archie comics. Pete does not like the Archie comics that much. Justin, let's go for the positive first. What do you think about this issue?
I liked it a lot. I feel like there's an existential dread in this Archie comic, which is not normally associated with Archie and the Riverdale universe in the comic form anyway. And I really liked the way it really felt that Mark Waid and the artist Brian Augustine, is that right?
I think that's right.
Brian Austin Green?
Yeah, it's Brian Austin Green from 90210.
I think they do a great job of establishing this tone, which is both the loss or the sort of being lost when you graduate high school and the like the lostness of America going into World War II. Like it was good.
Yeah. Oh, Pete opened up the page. Brian Augustine and Mark Waid did the story. The line art is by Peter Krause.
Nice.
Who, if I remember, Mark Waid worked on Irredeemable, I think. Together, which is another great book. I really like this as well. I was very curious the entire time to try to figure out what's going on in Archie's head. Because to me, it's not quite clear. Does he want to go to war? Does he not want to go to war? Is he just kind of lost and trying to figure out what he is going to do with his life? It seems like there's something more going on there. And a lot of that is to Krause's art because he gives this very conflicted look to Archie throughout, which
I
liked.
And he's usually a real smiler.
Yes. The other thing that I think is interesting about it is we think of Archie as this very wholesome Americana, so it fits nicely with that period of time, and it's curious to see. I'm very curious to see in particular where it goes next in issue two.
I feel like they're going to end up going to war. This is a four-issue series, I believe.
Yeah.
And this first issue reminded me a lot of the beginning of Starship Troopers, the movie, where they're all like...
Which is, we should mention, your only touch point for war.
Yeah, exactly. It's a bug planet, and we got to go to war there. No, because it's that movie does a good job of showing like young people going to war. Well, you don't be so squinty. This is what's going to happen. They're here at the beginning. They're friends in high school. They're going to end up meeting on the battlefield. They're going to have different paths. That's my prediction. Mark it down. Also, I know how World War II ends.
Do you want to know more? Check out Justin's website.
Pete?
All right, so...
obviously, the lawn is overwatered. Did you have any other criticisms?
It's a five
and
issue.
And what do you think? So brain bugs, good, or a menace?
This five issue issues. Number Great. One of five. I like the Riverdale show. I don't like the Archie comics. So taking the Archie comics and then bringing them back to more racist time, not exactly something that I would enjoy.
There's not racism. The racism isn't a focus on this comic.
That's also, true. I want to throw it out to you. If you're taking things back in time,
I just want to throw it out to you. All modern comics also exist in a very racist time.
So did your grandparents. So are they racist?
I'm stating facts here. All right. So back the fuck up.
Yeah.
I'd like to point out that my grandparents were racist.
Well, thanks for sharing.
They're big listeners.
Yeah,
too.
So we have this. It's fun to see Jughead more cheeseburger oriented, but you're having a main character who just looks like he's dazed and confused on medication or something. You don't know what's going on with him. He just zones out and nobody's talking to him about it. So it's a little frustrating of a read.
Everybody is trying to talk to him. Betty tries to talk to him. Veronica is, you know, busy doing her own thing as usual because she's the worst. I think we could all agree on that.
She's very couture.
She is. And Jughead's busy with his burgers, as you mentioned, but Betty is trying to connect with him.
Yeah.
All day, like, every day.
He throws her picture down on the, it's heartbreaking. I want to have an in to relate and like this comic, but so far, no go.
Well, let me ask you a question. Given the setup of this comic, Archie does go to war. Does he trip and accidentally blow up Hitler or something like that?
Well, in this issue, we see a lot of Archie being clumsy. My prediction with that is he's going to actually be a very competent soldier. Mm. He's going to put away his childhood.
Attention.
Yeah, I'm sure he will be paying attention.
Well, you don't know that. Based on this comic, you can't say that.
Yeah. I guess he'll just water the German lawns.
Yeah, so.
Ooh, you know how they feel about that. Yeah, don't like it.
Don't like it.
Don't like it at all. All right, that is out today, this Wednesday, but we're going to move on to another book that's not coming out until September 19th. So we're not going to give you any spoilers about this, but a little bit of an advance look. Dark Horse, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, The Reckoning, number 4. Now, the thing that makes this unique is this is, as far as we know, the very last Buffy the Vampire Slayer comic maybe ever.
No.
What?
Yeah. So for those of you who haven't been paying attention, they are working on a Buffy TV reboot that's very early stages right now. They haven't said this is tied to what's going on, but Joss Whedon came out and said, okay, this fourth issue, by the way, this is the last issue. This is the last issue we're doing with Dark Horse. At the same time, the license for Firefly went from Dark Horse to Boom Comics, so there might be something similar in the works there. Buffy may be moving somewhere else, or they may be taking it off so that they can start fresh and new with the TV reboot. We don't know. Either way, this is the last announced Buffy reboot, Buffy comic after, this is the 12th season, technically, of the show.
Yeah.
So it's been a big, long while. I know you guys have been a little off and on with Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but I'm curious to hear what you thought about this last issue. How do you feel the whole run ran finished up?
Well, I don't know about the whole run, but I really liked this issue. I thought it was great.
And remember, no spoilers.
I'm not spoiling anything.
Right,
I
know it's killing you.
Did you see the control he's exhibiting? He's like a yogi.
I just think it's enjoyable. And if it is the last one, I think they did a great job. And I was very happy with this issue as a whole. I thought it was really well done. A lot of fun stuff in there.
Like you said, I haven't been following all the Buffy issues. I think I read maybe the first two comic book seasons that came out. This one, I thought there were some great character moments. I do think the Buffy universe went insane over the seasons in the comic book form, and it feels... Reading this made me wish it was simpler, which is why I'm excited for the reboot of the TV show. I like the way they tied up a lot of the main relationships.
They really did. And a lot of that credit, I think, goes to Christos Gage, who took it over a couple of seasons ago, writing the comic books. He nailed the voices of the characters. I agree with you. The first season, I think that was season 8, in the Buffy the Dark Horse comic books was crazy. It was over the top. It was them saying, oh, we can do everything. We can make Dawn 50 feet tall.
Yeah, it's the biggest budget TV show.
And it didn't make a lot of sense. What Christos Gage did was working with the rest of the team made it feel like, okay, we've got an idea for this season. There's a specific focus. There's a specific villain we need to deal with. This one, for better or for worse, this miniseries felt a little smaller to me, you know, not just in terms of length, but in terms of scope. There's some big things that they tie up. For those of you who haven't been picking it up, the idea is the Frey miniseries, which takes place far in the future with the last Slayer or the first Slayer after a good long time, after something happened where Buffy and the rest of the Slayers disappeared, comes back in time, is tracking down her evil vampire brother and trying to stop an apocalypse in the present. This wraps that up up really nicely, wraps up a lot of other threads. I don't think it's too much of a spoiler to say it does leave things open nicely at the end as well, which I think is important to do for a Buffy the Vampire Slayer comic book, but I appreciate where they left it. That said, I agree with you. I'm excited to see what they do next, and frankly, they left it at a place where if the TV series does go back and wipe all of this clean, I think I'm okay with it.
I feel like it will. Here's what do you think the new series is going to, what's the pitch?
They've been very cagey about it. My guess is that it is a new Slayer, but takes place in the same universe.
Really? You think it's going to honor the, it's not going to be just a reboot?
I don't think so. I don't think they're going to do a clean reboot. Enough time has passed since the TV series that where do they always joke about the other Hellmouth would be in Cincinnati, I think, or something like that, or maybe Cleveland.
Cleveland seems real.
Yeah. So I would bet they set it in Cleveland. They have a Slayer there dealing with a new Hellmouth. You have the option to bring in other characters for guest appearances, but really you follow a new Slayer on her own path as she pushes forward.
So it's like Buffy, a Vampire Slayer.
Yes, exactly.
Or how about Vampire the Buffy Slayer?
Ooh, that's
good. Bunch of Buffys running loose.
You know what? I know they have a really talented writer working on this, but I want you on it instead.
Oh, thank you. You hear that, Hollywood? You hear that, Pete?
No. I completely disagree.
By the way, for those, that's what I was going to say. It's his nickname, and he greenlights everything in Hollywood. We probably should have taken advantage of that.
Because he isn't greenlighting anything of mine.
So that's coming out September 19th. Pick that up. Then moving on to a big comic book out today from Marvel, Infinity Wars, number 3. Oh, it's all happening. The wars are never stopping. They're still going. For those of you who haven't been picking up this title from Jerry Duggan and Mike Deodato, Gamora has gained control of all the Infinity Stones.
Super quickly.
She's taken care of every hero in the Marvel Universe and basically destroyed or killed them. She killed Thanos, and now she is mixing up with Lucky Loki. Mixing up with Loki and another god who is there to tell his story. And yeah, that's pretty much leading into this issue. What do you think about this one?
Now we see what the whole game has been about here. The Infinity Warps.
Yeah.
Where they're combining heroes.
Yeah, that's insane.
Which, to me it felt like, I was like, oh, I see. It feels like, I don't want to use the word gimmick, but it definitely feels like I see the pitch when it was in the room, what they were going to do.
Well, I mean, you know, it's that thing of like, Spider-Verse was popular and like all these other like combination stuff. So, you know, it's interesting. It's fun.
Do you think they were in the room and they were fighting and they were like, we got to do this Infinity Wars book. Infinity Wars. What's the catch though? What's the thing? And so they're just fighting and fighting. And somebody's like, I'm sorry, I got to pee. And they're like, wait, what did you just say? You said pee. They said pee, Infinity Warp. That's it. Infinity Warps. And they hit on it.
Yeah.
Did you like that, Pete?
There's no way that's not true. The whole thing is definitely a reference to you're in a golden shower.
Yeah, 100%. It's a golden shower of ideas.
Definitely that. I think it's a smart way to take the idea that Thanos eliminated half the souls in the world.
Yeah.
And Gamora does it the same way, but rather than killing, she's combining. So there's no...
It was worth it for Ghost Panther. I mean, that...
It's you're going to see more.
They're launching all of these miniseries with these Infinity Warps, which are taking Marvel characters and jamming them together, basically making its own amalgam universe out of the Marvel Universe characters. I agree with you, Justin. Reading this felt like we wanted to do a bunch of miniseries, I guess.
Yeah.
But that said, I also agree with you that the thing that I think forgives it is there's something else going on here, right?
Yeah.
Like there's some greater story that they are telling. Yeah. They are very open about the fact that they are basically copying what happened in Infinity War. Loki has been talking about some greater puppet master messing with these stories. So even this riff on what happens in every single event to me feels like it is calculated and it is planned. It is part of the Uber story that Duggan and company are telling.
Yeah, I agree with you. What's your favorite? Obviously, Pete's Ghost Panther.
Yeah. I want to read that comic right now.
You will get to very soon. Alex?
I don't know. What was the Moon Knight Spider
That's
Knight?
That's mine. Spider Knight.
Yeah, sure. Mainly because they had a fun exchange earlier in the book, and I was like, oh, all right, I want to see them.
The Sorcerer Supreme Captain America one was also really cool.
That one's funny to me because they're like, the characters are sort of shitting on him instantly. They're like, this fucking guy's magic. Yeah. And they're like, they think it's lame. I was like, what?
Well, again, I think that's something that I points to Dugan's take on this. Is they realize what they're doing. They realize that they're not like, yeah, this is going to be so extreme and cool. They immediately make fun of it. Loki immediately walks up and he's like, oh, what's going on with the X-Mansion? What's weird about that?
Yeah.
And then Dupool wanders through, which points to how ridiculous this idea is, this thing that Gamora has done.
It definitely is commenting on it at the same time it's executing it.
Yeah, which I think is great. It's very smart. That said, I'm more curious to see where this goes in the long run. I think this is one that's going to read very nicely in collection because right now, you don't really know exactly what the story is. You don't know what the thrust is. It's still a mystery.
Who's pulling the strings?
Yeah. I'm just surprised.
What characters?
That people let Loki.
The puppet master.
your strings.
No. The Fantastic Four villain is the puppet master.
Definitely. Yeah. People are dying for them.
Yeah.
Every time I see Loki, I'm like, why doesn't someone just shoot this guy in the head? Like,
because he's fun.
No, every time he shows up, he's up to no good. So why listen to him? Why let him talk?
Why doesn't anybody shoot you in the head?
Well, yeah.
Well, more than welcome to.
You're more than welcome to.
Give it a try. See what happens.
Yeah, whoa.
Bang. Oh, man. I had no idea you had a bulletproof head.
Wow. Yeah, what a trickster god.
Hey, if you could infinity warp with anybody, who would it be?
I'd be very curious to see how Al LePage came together.
Oh, really?
What it's just aspects.
Wow, he'd have glasses.
He'd definitely have glasses. Yeah. That we can guarantee.
Pete LeTyler.
No, we're talking a booth sizzle.
Oh, ooh, I like it. All right, moving on to a DC comic, House of Whispers number one. This is spinning out of the Sandman Universe books, following one of the tales that we teased in the initial issue with the titular House of Whispers. Again, big Sandman fan, how'd you feel about this one?
Yeah,
Justin?
How'd you feel about it?
This one, wow, you think? Very aggressive. Jesus. Wow,
I don't want to infinity warp with you anymore.
Ooh. Pete, why don't we use our House of Inside voices when we're talking about this
what
issue?
What did you think about this?
I felt a little confused basically the entire time reading this. I really liked the sort of the back half of the issue, really, the game of telephone and the way just sort of the riff on how people speak to each other and the danger of it. Sort of reminded me of this past
the
season
danger
of Legion.
Playing that game because, you know,
the danger of telephones.
Yeah.
We shouldn't be talking to people unless we're face-to-face.
Yep.
The danger of infecting other people with, like, mishearing something and letting that infection sort of
gossip.
Grow. Yeah. So that was sort of
danger.
It reminded me of the season of Legion, as I was saying. What did you guys think?
So just as a setup of this, there's two things going on. One, we get, I don't know if it's specifically a part of the dreaming, but it's certainly dreaming adjacent, where we find the House of Whispers, where people go to pray and offer things up. And then the other half is following this family that has something weird going on with them. We don't know exactly what it is, but they are in some way connected to the House of Whispers as well. I agree with you. It took a while to get into and understand what was going on in this world. I particularly like there's a character, I don't know if he's a gator god or what's going on.
You like that guy?
He's messed up and kind of scary. There's a whole speech he gives about eating prawns alive.
Yeah, that was cool.
That's a very good scene in that book. That one I enjoyed a lot. And
Dude, you were twisted, man. You enjoyed that?
Again, there's a difference between enjoying something and saying that I like it and want it to happen.
Have you eaten shrimp before?
Yeah, but I don't eat it like this guy eats it.
Yeah, no. I just unhook my jaw, my fangs come out, and I eat it alive.
How do you eat it humanely? Or do you humanely, like...
Well, first, I say some nice words about the shrimp's life.
You get a shrimp cocktail, and you're praying six times before you dip it in.
Have you ever been to one of Pete's shrimp cocktail tributes? Yeah. They're 3 hours long. They're honestly really beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Man, so you must be... okay, great. Complicated jambalaya.
The last one, Richard Belzer showed up.
That's a weird, specific person to talk to. I will say, if anyone in the Who's Famous would be friends with Pete, it'd be the Bells.
Yeah,
the Bells.
Absolutely. It gets to some interesting places by the end of the issue. So, again, I'm curious to see where it goes. Particularly, I'm surprised how much it seems to be tying in with the rest of the Sandman universe books. They're very much not independent books.
Definitely. And I also think this read a lot like early issues of Sandman, the Neil Gaiman Sandman series. Like, it could fit in as a storyline in the first like 30 issues of that series.
I really love the art. I thought it was a cool, weird story. I can't wait for more.
All right, let's move on to a Boom Studios book, Low Road West, number one. Now, this is by one of the folks that we had on the show just the other day. And this is following a bunch of teens that travel through a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and things get weirder from there. I really enjoyed this debut. I thought it was really interesting, and I was surprised about all the turns that it took throughout the book. What'd you guys think?
I really liked this book. When I was like reading up on it, I was like, what the fuck is this? But reading it, it's very enjoyable, very artistic, the way it's kind of drawn and the story is told. I'm completely on board, and I have no idea what's happening.
Yeah, I think it's that's a good take, because you don't know. It's combining sort of a couple different genres. It felt like an episode of Outer Limits or something, where it just throws you into a world and then says, oh, you think it's going to be that? No, it's actually about maybe magic, maybe some sort of techno nanites. I don't know.
Oh, okay. I was wondering where you were going with that word.
Techno. It's like techno dancing. Just like dancing. It's like techno dancing. Cutting loose. Totally. Like taking your clothes off at night whenever you want to feel alive.
It reminded me a little bit. I wonder if it's a riff on Brigadoon at all. I don't know if you guys know that.
Interesting.
But
Brigadoon?
Yep.
Is that what you mean?
I mean, Brigadoon! So this is by Philip Kennedy Johnson. If you want to go back and listen to our live show with him, very interesting guy.
Great guest. That's one of a great episode. Really interesting guy.
And the art is by Flaviano. Definitely, definitely, definitely pick this one up. Moving on to our next book, Birthright number 31 from Image Comics. We've been a big fan of the series, but it's been a while since the last issue has been coming. They took a little bit of a break, but they're back.
Yeah.
Big time. So the idea of this book is there is a kid disappears, ends up going to a magical land, comes back as a roided out barbarian. The secret of the book is that he is taken over by Lore, the god king of the place, who's basically like if Frodo was taken over by Sauron, I guess is the way of thinking of it.
Yeah, Frodo's the most jacked hero I can think of.
Oh my God, he's got like muscles on top of muscles.
Yeah. Man, what a six pack.
Oh God.
Yes, I think that, and I'm a huge fan of this book.
I'm just saying I'd like Frodo to make me into his second breakfast. Do you know what I mean?
Oh my gosh.
If you guys, you could have heard, Alex paused and like, for seemed like forever while he was imagining that. And so much so that I was like, oh, I guess I'll talk now. But no, Alex was still
I was just still thinking.
You're just devouring Frodo in his mind.
Oh God.
Can we talk about this book?
What a real hobbit eater over here.
What did you think as the Birthright expert?
I thought this was great.
Sorry, I take offense to that. As a Jew who actually has Birthright, which allows me to go back to Israel up until my teen years, I believe I am the Birthright expert.
I'm talking about the comic book, Dick.
Oh, that's Justin. Thank
you. Nice. Do they give you these issues as you travel back to
yes, when you walk up to the Western Wall, they had you a full run of Birthright by Joshua Williamson. <That's>
smart.
Very good cool. Way to do it. Yeah. What a great integration. Great product integration with
Image Comics is on it.
Now, as fathers, does this issue scare you at all? Because this is the reason I don't have kids, is because I'm worried that I'm going to have this devil child that's going to want to kill everybody.
Oh, interesting.
We get a flashback this issue as Pete is mentioning to the daughter of Lore. We find out a little bit more about her through a couple of the other characters who are in some dire straits right now. Another very messed up issue of a comic book.
Yeah.
I want to go back and read this because I kind of forgot where we were up till this point.
Right.
But man, one thing that I think is so impressive about this book is how they constantly twist our allegiance to the characters. You don't really know who is good and who is bad at any given moment.
At this point, we don't really know if Lore, the Sauron character, is good or bad. Like, he could be someone who was just trying to do right by his people.
Well, if you think about Lord of the Rings, Sauron is the good character, right? And Frodo is the evil character who's trying to destroy his ring.
He's trying to destroy an engagement ring.
Like a jerk.
Come on. Let it ring. Let it ring.
Right, Pete?
Thoughts on this for this kid? Does this shit scare you?
No, I'm fine raising an evil child.
Really?
Like, one out of every... I just had a new child. And to me, like, I feel like one of them's got to be evil.
The scariest part of horror movies is always the creepy kid. And yeah, this girl in this is crazy creepy and brings it to a whole nother level.
Yes, and it feels almost like a nursery rhyme, this issue. It's like a nice standalone story. We get a backstory on the witch that has... witch is maybe the wrong word for what she is, but she's kidnapped the main character's younger brother, Brendan, and it's a fun... What's great about Birthright is Williamson does such a good job of just carving out every little pocket of this universe. He's really taking his time to tell this story, and this is one of my favorite comic series.
All right, let's move on to another comic book from Image Comics, Cemetery Beach, number one,
yes,
by Warren Ellis. Pete, you're our Warren Ellis expert here, I think.
No, yep. I don't know about that.
I don't know. Definitely not,
actually.
What did you think about this book?
I love this book. I thought it was really, really, really well done. Art is fantastic. Some interesting characters in this book. A crazy world. As far as the first issue, does everything you want it to do. Really gets you on board with this whole story and plot idea. I was very impressed. They have some cool double page spreads here just to let you know kind of like where they are and stuff. I've read this book like four times now, and I'm still loving it.
Yeah. Wow.
There's a lot of fun little things with the back matter and the stuff in the front. It was just, it's really cool.
Let's talk about what the actual story is.
Yeah, sure.
A little bit. So it's a little bit like the TV show Counterpart on Starz. If anybody been watching
what?
That,
oh, it's okay. That?
J.K. Simmons is the main character. It's actually really good.
I've only seen the first two episodes of that. The two J.K. Simmons, do they bang at any point?
I don't want to spoil it for you.
Okay,
There is a little Frodo action.
yes.
So what happens here is there's a sort of pocket dimension, I guess, maybe, and a bunch of people from regular America go and live there, and shit goes wrong, and our main character has crossed over into this other area and is sort of in trouble. And we're learning. We don't know a ton about the world, and we're watching what unfolds.
Yeah, the art is great in this issue. I thought this was fun and creative. It feels very Warren Ellis in terms of, hey, we've got this neat idea. Now let's add a million other ideas as we go along. But it's fun. The only thing I'm worried about is I feel like a lot of his titles lately start really strong, and then he gets bored of them about three quarters of the way through before he's done.
Watch your mouth, man.
We were talking trees, about this on our Patreon Slack channel, where we were talking about trees, where it's like, wait, is that still being made, or am I confusing that with this other comic?
Injection,
like,
right?
With Injection, which I've stuck with Injection, and I haven't stuck with trees, and it does feel like, are they even the same book?
Right. And both of them are great. Like, Trees is a fantastic book. Injection is a fantastic book. I really like Cemetery Beach so far, but it does feel like there's a certain point where we're like, what's the story of this book again? Where did we get to?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm still on board. Absolutely. The scene at the beginning is fantastic with the characters. We slowly learn more about our main character, and then we meet the secondary character as well. Very enjoyable.
Oh, another important thing to mention is anytime I say J.K. Simmons, I feel like I'm going to say Rowling and say the wrong one.
Every time.
Yeah, it's just a personal crisis.
Yeah. So I've only lived the amount that I've lived. I haven't lived my whole life yet. Do they bang?
I'm sorry, Ax. You've actually lived your whole life.
Moving on to our next Marvel comic book, Iceman number one. This book was untimely canceled a couple of months ago, but it is back with the same team on board, which is very exciting for people. Now, if you don't know, Iceman is a man made out of ice.
Great.
Wow, way to sum that up.
Yeah, there
That's
you go.
Good.
Anyway, he's an X-Man. He came out of the closet in the previous series, or rather in the Brian Michael Bendis run, but was dealing with it quite a bit. But now he is happily out and happily dating, which is a very different status quo for him. They deal with that a little bit at the beginning of the book before they jump into essentially a new mutant massacre thing that's going on, which is pretty weird. What'd you guys think about this book?
I'd read the book that had been canceled and only picked up with this one. So I really liked how far the Iceman story has come along. I feel like for so long, Bendis introduced the idea that the original Iceman was gay and he came out, but then because he's a past or an earlier version of our present day Iceman that outed him when he wasn't ready to do it. And it was sort of like, it's such an interesting story, but then it sort of sat on the shelf for so long. So I really like to see that it's progressed to this point. And the writer Sina Grace really like has a take, is really putting it out there. And it feels like a very original, original voice. Iceman feels like true to himself, to the original Iceman, but also in this new place.
I agree. I like this as a fresh take on Iceman. I feel like this was a fun comic that to me felt like an X-Men comic. And yeah, I was impressed with the team ups and the cameos and
Bishop.
Yeah, I thought it was cool. And it had a good kind of last page reveal. Kind of checked all my boxes a little bit. I was very happy with this book.
I was super uncomfortable with this book.
And really?
Yeah, I'll tell you exactly why. I liked the first Iceman run. I thought that was good. What they did over in that title was very smart. I liked watching his coming out journey. I liked the beginning of this book as well. Same sort of thing. Seemed to be following on it very closely. But as soon as they got into the New Mutant Massacre stuff, it made me feel very uncomfortable. And specifically made me feel very uncomfortable because Iceman was joking the entire time. The first time, I don't know if our listeners have necessarily read this, but the original Mutant Massacre was Mr. Sinister is controlling these mutants called the Marauders, sends them into the tunnels to kill all the Morlocks. It's gritty and upsetting. It's spilled out into a lot of the rest of the Marvel Universe and had some big changes for a really long time. Nightcrawler got really hurt. Colossus got really hurt. Kitty Pryde.
Archangel, yeah. Wasn't that when he lost his wings?
No, that was something else. Wasn't
that was Inferno, maybe.
Yeah. But Kitty Pryde couldn't rephase for a while or really talk to anybody. So these very upsetting things happened to some of our favorite characters for a really long time. Here, the same thing is happening, also, spoiler, with a lot of the same characters, and instead we're getting Iceman throwing jokes and throwing punches all the time, up to the point where Bishop calls about it. So I know they're aware of that as a team, that that's what they're doing, but the thing that immediately threw me is one of the first jokes that Iceman makes when they go and attack is he makes a, and here's where our troubles began, joke. He throws that out. That's the title of the second volume of Mouse, which is a very, very strange joke to throw out.
Do you think
when
that's
you're
a purposeful reference?
Do you think that's purposeful?
Either it is purposeful or it's not. Either way, it makes me very uncomfortable because if it is purposeful, he's making a genocide joke at the beginning of an arc about genocide. If it's not, he didn't realize that, and that somehow points to a bigger problem with the issue for me, personally.
Interesting.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things where it's a kind of a common phrase. It's not like it was, you know, I don't know. I'm not defending it, but I'm just saying, like, if somebody didn't know of a bigger thing, you know.
No, listen, I get that. That's fair. That might be in my head because I have read Mouse so many times. That phrase is intrinsically tied to Mouse for me.
Yeah.
But given the storyline and given that's the kickoff to them being like, okay, we're going to fight these guys and here's where my troubles began, made me feel super awkward right off the bat. So that all said, I liked the beginning. I liked where it gets left at the end. I have enough faith built up from the first series in terms of where they're going. But I do feel like you need to be very careful when you're playing, particularly with any sort of genocide storyline, you know?
Yeah.
That's all. It's not necessarily, to me, the place for jokes.
Right.
That's all I'd say. Speaking of which, moving on to more jokes, let's talk about our next title. This is another one coming out from Dark Horse on September 19th from Dark Horse / Burger Books. Olivia Twist, number one. Again, we won't do any spoilers about it, but I think you can figure out for the title, it's a little bit of a twist on the old twist.
Whoa. Yes, it's an Oliver Twist twist.
Yeah, a double twist.
Double twist. And except in this one, they have gender swapped a lot of the main characters.
Yes. Cool. So it's gender swapped. It takes place in the future. But otherwise, it's Oliver Twist.
Time swapped, gender swapped.
Yeah. What'd you guys think about this book?
I thought it was fun, enjoyable. I liked the art, liked the action. I felt like it did a good job telling the story and a kind of a thing that's familiar, but putting it a little bit newer. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I'll look forward to more.
I'm not a huge Oliver Twist head.
Really?
So
from someone who's classically trained?
Wait. Sorry. Before we move on, Pete, could you say the last thing you said?
Really?
Yeah. Could you say the last thing you said?
Classically trained?
No. The last thing you said. You're looking forward to what?
Looking forward to more?
More? You want more?
Wow. Oh, man, the twist head emerges. Alex Zalvin.
I'm just going to say a lot of musical references in this podcast.
Yeah. Well, that Oliver Twist was a story.
What?
Or it was a musical.
Oh, what?
Yeah, written by David Copperfield, the magician.
Oh, okay. That's why it's so magical.
Exactly. I say that because
you have to like this.
Why?
Because you're classically trained.
It's not a play.
It's a book by Charles Dickens.
It's a novel. Fuck novels.
It's a classic, though.
No, plays are what I do. Novels are for assholes.
Wow. That's not true.
Put it on the stage if you want me to hear it. That's why I love comic books that are adapted for the stage.
Oh, my God. Oh. Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark.
Yeah, exactly.
The Superman Up, Up, and Away musical.
Yep. There's nothing, and that's it, basically.
Was there a Swamp Thing musical? Am I imagining that?
That
I
feels like a joke someone made once.
Okay, maybe. I don't know.
Swamp Thing TV show. I mean, maybe. I don't know. If anyone knows about Swamp Thing musical or is casting, let me know. I'm ready to audition.
I'll play Arcade.
Please get to your point.
I'm stuck in this muck. Don't give a fuck.
Ooh, it's like an adult's musical.
Yeah,
I like
it's very, very edgy. I was saying, it felt like they make reference to all the Oliver Twist characters in a way where it's like, hi, I'm Fagin, and we're all supposed to be like, yeah. And I was like, I don't know. I don't know who these are.
I've been really liking the Berger books as they've been coming out. They've really been developing a sense and a thrust to the line.
Yeah.
This is not necessarily...
Would you say the Berger books are well done?
it's rare for me to say that, but yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Great.
I agree with you. This is all right. Liked it more as the book went on. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious to see how it does diverge from the Oliver Twist storyline more than anything.
Yeah. And the future elements they introduced, because
exactly.
That was interesting.
Yeah. That definitely does change things, and it is interesting to see how it does change the characters.
Yeah, there's less gruel.
Less gruel, more protein bars or something like that. Yeah. Probably. Yeah. Pretty cool. Moving on to the next book from Boom Studios. Welcome to Wanderland, number one. This follows a young girl who's a big fan of a rundown theme park called Wanderland, who ends up, spoiler, in the real Wanderland.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Oh.
May I?
Oh, yes, absolutely, Pete.
All right, so I was all ready to hate this book because it's a Zalbin book. It's a...
What are you
Alex
always
written.
Say that. You always say
Because you
that.
Love the cutesy bullshit books.
Wow.
But this...
Great, thanks.
I loved. I really,
really?
Really?
Well, what did you
enjoyed
love about
this.
It?
I like the twist that...
the Olivia twist?
No, the twist that there was this real place and she found. And I really like the... character who showed up who was kind of brash. I was ready to hate this book and I had and it won me over and I was really impressed.
Nice. Alex, is this cutesy bullshit that you love?
I don't love all cutesy bullshit, I'll just throw out there.
Mm-hmm, sure.
No, I really don't. I thought this was all right. I liked some of the riffs that they did on theme parks. I'd like to see more of that as they go, frankly. Because it felt like they set it up very quickly, what was going on in Wanderland and what the idea of the theme park was. So once they got to the real Wanderland, we didn't have as much frame of reference for the park as we needed when we get to the actual magical land. But they do work in some nice theme park references. And I would just like to see that amp up as the series continues.
Yeah, I agree with you. I wanted it to have more of a take on in the fantasy Wanderland world. That just feels like a sort of a straight ahead fantasy world. And I want more going on there.
Right. But there are some things like they're eating giant turkey legs and they have some secret pathways and things like that. So I thought that was cute. The weirder thing to me, and this has to be absolutely accidental, but there's an animated movie that's coming out either, I think, early next year called Wonder Park that, as far as I can tell, has essentially the same plot, where there's a young girl who used to visit this park when she was younger. It's become totally run down, and when she visits again, it turns out that it's real and filled with magical creatures.
That's
so
cool.
So it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how much these two ideas are the same and how much they are different.
Yeah.
All right, last book we are going to talk about from DC Comics, Superman Giant number 3. Now, if you don't have a Walmart near you, like we don't have a Walmart near us.
No, we live in New York City.
Yeah, we're Kmart town. Get out of here, Walmart.
Yeah, and you're a big Kmart shopper.
Yes, so DC Comics has been releasing these 100-page giants with original material and some reprint material only at Walmarts. It's been pretty controversial. Comic book stores in particular have been pretty upset about it, wondering why they don't get it first. People like us here in New York, well, we don't care. We don't care about anything. But other towns without Walmarts are pretty upset because they can't get the comic books either. But we did check out Superman Giant number 3, specifically the story from Andy Kubert and Tom King. Mm-hmm. What did you think about this? Is this worth trekking out to a Walmart to pick up?
I mean, I think the art's great, and Tom King sets up an interesting story for Superman involving kidnapping and a bunch of like death surrounding it. So it's sort of a darker story for Superman, which feels odd to be in a Walmart release book. But I did like it, and I think it's I'm curious to see where the story goes. Superman has to leave behind all his normal world-saving stuff to investigate this missing girl.
Yeah, it's the sort of book that you want to pick up a deluxe box of Oreos, some chips, maybe a couple of new T-shirts, some underwear, and then watch Superman watch a girl die.
Yeah, I definitely get this. Those fresh undies.
Oh man,
to me this felt like a great Superman book. I liked where it was going. I liked the setup, and I also liked how Batman made Superman go talk to that little girl in the hospital. I thought that was really cool. Yeah, I'm on board with this. I want more.
Yeah, Andy Kubert's art is fantastic. I think that's the real showcase here. And nothing against Tom King, who also is a very good writer, but this clearly is him writing for Andy Kubert, being like, great, have him destroy a gigantic robot. You know, go for that. And it's not just a phoning it in story, which is the sort of thing that you would expect from a Walmart comic book, I think. Right. It's really good.
Yeah. Definitely surprised by the big swing of it.
Yeah. How do you guys feel, though, about these Walmart comic books? Good idea, bad idea, don't care.
If it gets more people and underserved people reading comic books, then I'm all for it. I feel like comic book fans can track it down when non-comic book fans won't encounter this unless they do at a Walmart. So I understand the outrage around it, but I like that maybe a new comic reader will read this story about a murder.
I say, fuck you. You know, I'm the guy going.
You do say that.
Yeah, I do say that a lot. I'm the guy going looking for comic books to buy, and you're not going to let me buy a comic book. I have to go to some shitty place. I'm not excited about that, and I think it sucks.
Wow, that's pretty harsh. I would say I wish it was something a little different. You know, it looks like one of those cheapy magazines like Avengers Infinity War is coming out. Here's 100 things you need to know about Avengers that you pick up and like flip through at a newsstand and then put back immediately. Mm. When it's actually a much better product than that. I almost wish it was Tom King and Andy Kubert's original graphic novel in a magazine, just like an oversized story done in one, because I think that's the sort of thing that would really bring people in. I understand the urge to not have, here's issue 634 of Superman inside of a Walmart, because that's a huge bar for people.
Yeah.
But I wish it was even less of a bar and looked less generic. That's my two cents.
That makes sense. All right, that's cool.
All right, there we go. That is it for the stack. If you would like to support us, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. at the Pit Loft in New York. Please come on by. We'll chat with you about comic books. Do you want to know more? Pete, let them know.
Friend us on Facebook so you get to know about the amazing guests we have on our live show.
Follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live.
Check us out at comicbookclublive.com. If you want to know more,
stop this bit.
And I'll see you at Mount Doom with my bae.